Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. Remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Well, it's no big surprise. It's that time of year when the cream starts rising to the top. Hi, I'm Bob Bubka here with Alex Maselli, and with the second major of the year just a few short weeks away, seems like the top players are showing what they're made of. Let's bring in the ultimate insider in the world of professional and amateur golf, none other than the one and only Alex Maselli. Pretty interesting how the top players all showing pretty good form.
Well, especially I think, maybe 3 weeks ago, we were questioning what's going on with Rory after a poor performance at Wells Fargo, not getting it done. Jordan Spieth, spitting the bit in the final round at AT&T, and again saying, is this what happens after what happened at Augusta, and when will he turn it around, when will he get it done? So now all of a sudden we're a week later, and Rory wins Ireland, takes the week off at BMW. Then you got Jordan winning a Colonial in, I think, very impressive fashion down the stretch. And now all of a sudden we're going into a memorial with the top three guys in the world all having wins their last time out.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point, though. Rory McIlroy taking off perhaps the biggest event on the European Tour. Any story behind that?
Well, I think this is professional golf 2016, where scheduling is so important, makes so much sense in what you're doing, that you, because of the big events, and I understand BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth is a big event. I understand that. But it's not as big as the majors, the FedEx Cup, probably the Race to Dubai, and potentially, if you're Rory McIlroy, the Olympics. So that being said, when you start thinking about all that, you got to look at what's best for you in your game. And Rory McIlroy decided it started a while ago. It wasn't like it was yesterday. It started a while ago that he needed to skip something, and it's going to be the BMW PGA.
I guess that decision probably made a lot easier with his victory at the Irish Open, an event that he was the host and an event that he desperately wanted to win. So when you win, anything you do right after that gets kind of glossed over just a little bit. I don't think if he was victorious at the Irish Open that skipping Wentworth might not been as well received.
Well, the thing is, Bob, I think that Wentworth in itself, the venue, lends itself to certain players, and I'm not sure Rory McIlroy is one of those players. And, just taking a start to take a start doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're Rory McIlroy, you want to take a start to take a start. You go to the French Open where it's double points, Ryder Cup points, where it's considered two starts versus one. That's the place you're going to take a start at before you can take a start at Wentworth.
So, a great winner at Wentworth, and we'll talk more about that. One other thing you said in your opening comment about Jordan Spieth winning in impressive fashion. If you peel back that onion just a little bit, I mean, even the last three holes, the 16th hole, he drives it into the trees, it hits a marshal's foot, comes back out where he has a shot that he can play. 17, he airmails the green, catches a good lie, then ultimately chips in. And, of course, 18, just ridiculous, 35-foot downhill side hill putt that finds the bottom of the cup. I don't think I'm completely in the camp that – he really was playing great golf.
Well, let's back up for a second. First of all, you've been around long enough to know you have to have some luck to win golf tournaments. It's not like you just go out there and you stripe it for 72 holes and you look up and you're the winner. So there's got to be some luck involved. So a marshal's foot, a good lie. That happens all the time to guys that win. Secondly, Jordan Spieth, the way he finished on the back nine at Colonial is exactly how he played to win as many times as he won in 2015. What you saw on the back nine at Colonial is exactly the Jordan Spieth that we have been seeing over and over again. And this is the things that people shake their head about after he won. I mean, take a look at Chambers Bay. Take a look at the Masters a year ago. Take a look at the Masters this year with nine holes to go. Jordan Spieth did not have his A game. Just found a way to get it around and making putts and doing all those things. That's how he wins. That is the game Jordan Spieth has. And you can question if he really had a good game or played well in those final nine holes at Colonial. But at the end of the day, he's the one that wrote down 30 at the back end of the scorecard, and he's the one that's holding the trophy and wearing that ridiculous jacket.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is that type of game sustainable?
Well, I think you have to ask Jordan Spieth that. It seems to be. I mean, the guy made, the putts he made, that's how Jordan Spieth wins. He is not a flashy player. We've all talked about the fact doesn't drive the ball long. Isn't a very good, great driver of the golf ball. According, and by the way, there used to be a number one player in the world that wasn't a great driver of the golf ball. Two, his iron play is, I think, average. His scrambling is pretty good. And his putter is unbelievable. Does that sound familiar to you?
Well, certainly. I mean, you're making reference to Tiger. I'm at a crossroads. I mean, Jordan Spieth does nothing but impress me with his results. I mean, and I guess at some point you have to just discard any notions on how he gets there and just enjoy and appreciate the fact that he did get there. And that's the struggle that I'm having. He mystifies me. It's almost magical. And maybe that's sustainable. I don't know. I mean, what the heck do I know? I mean, he's won eight times already, and he's not 23 years old. I mean, that's more times than Tiger won. Eight wins and 95 starts on the PGA Tour coming out of the box is absolutely mind-boggling.
Well, and I think, look, if you argued this isn't an argument for Jordan Spieth's game is not an argument for longevity, yeah, I could argue with that. But as you just said, he's 23 years old. He's got a lot of work to do on his game. He understands that. Cameron McCormick, his coach, understands that. But the good thing is why he's working on his game, he's winning golf tournaments.
And that's pretty amazing. Let's listen to what Jordan Spieth had to say about, recovering from his performance at the Masters.
We're kind of right on track. Obviously, we had a major last year, but and almost won this year. But things seem to be kind of back on track in contention three of the last four events, and that's the way we've tried to keep on looking at it. Michael's really kept me focused on that. Don't listen to the noise. Focus on the fact that you've had a chance to win three out of the last four events, which is pretty special, and that's not easy to do.
Well, he brings up a good point there. I mean, with an opportunity to win three of the last four events, it's pretty heady stuff.
Right. And I mean, look, it's interesting. Jordan started talking about we again. I'm starting to hear a lot more we again, feeling more comfortable what they are trying to do. But he's right. Look, any great player will say, I just want to get in contention. I want the opportunity to win the golf tournament. Jordan Spieth has now put himself in opportunities three of the last 4 weeks. I'm assuming he's talking Masters, AT&T last week in Colonial. He's had an opportunity all three of those. Didn't get it done at the Masters, as we all know. Played very poorly in the final round at AT&T, which can happen, and played terrifically in the final round at Colonial.
He certainly did that, and it does get him back closer to the number one spot in the world, but he still has a long way to go.
There's always certainly the goal to try and be number one in the world. I mean, that's just a fantastic title to own. So for me, I knew there was a large gap. I had been told before last week that had I won last week and this week, I still wouldn't take over. For me, it's big just to take a big step and a small chunk into Jason's lead.
He's got a long way to go, but it certainly we can't argue the fact that he's on the right track at the moment.
Right. I think that's true. The right track is good. However, as you said, you know, you saw some things in even his game at Colonial that you have to question a little what's going on with his game. He's still not hitting the ball the way he wants to. Colonial's kind of an odd place, though, because of the way you have to hit the ball so straight and be so precise with your drives. That being said, he now will go somewhere to go to the next venue, which is really the last venue before he's for the U.S. Open. In fact, a last for a lot of these guys. And he's going to be playing against some heady competition on a very, very good golf course. And, you know, quite honestly, there's no question that Jason Day is the hottest player in golf right now, even though Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth are both coming in with wins. So it'll be interesting to see how Jordan does on what is a big boy golf course at Muirfield Village.
And certainly going to be good preparation for the big boy golf course, as you so well put it. When we get to the second major of the year, the United States Open. Some other players that did pretty well. Harris English came in second. His best finish since he tied for second at the Farmers Insurance Open. You know, he's won two times on tour. When I look at Harris English, Alex, I look at a very, very solid player. Not flashy in any way, but very solid.
You know, winning on the PGA Tour, Bob, is very, very difficult, no matter how good you are. And Harris English is, as you said, a very solid and a very good player. So the question is when will it happen again? I think, you know, I don't think there's a question of if it'll happen again. It's just when it'll happen again. And, you know, Harris had some issues with being confident, and I think he's past that. You know, it's funny, as an aside, because it's so hard to win on the PGA Tour, many people may not know this, but the way the purses are structured, 18% of the purse goes to the winner. I believe that the percentage of the purse that goes to the winner should be much higher because it is so terribly hard to win on this tour.
Well, they try and keep it equitable for, you know, not just the winner. And we could argue till the cows come home about that 18%, but I don't see that changing in the near future. One guy that I was kind of rooting for, local favorite, Colonial member, Ryan Palmer, one of the good guys out there. His dad, Butch, passed away last August. Ryan made it well known that Colonial was his dad's favorite event, and certainly Ryan Palmer wanted to win. He finished tied third with Webb Simpson, who maybe is seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel. He had to give up that anchor putting method and seemed to putt at least decent at Colonial. Good sign for a former U.S. Open champion, Webb Simpson.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Palmer knew the golf course very well, played well, but, you know, ran into a buzzsaw at Jordan Spieth, which, you know, you can understand how that can happen. And Webb Simpson just having a second baby, I think, you know, coming off of that with his wife Dowd. Look, probably hadn't had a lot of expectations coming in, but played well. And you know what? You never know. Some of these guys just getting themselves ready going into a U.S. Open in a couple of weeks. Webb Simpson, when he went to Olympic, you know, he wasn't really discussed much. Then all of a sudden he wins a U.S. Open. So that's how it happened. So we'll see what happens with both these guys.
Well, another player we'll keep an eye on. He won the BMW PGA Championship. Chris Wood solidified his spot probably on the upcoming Ryder Cup team, which is going to take place in September. And then, Alex, what about the Senior PGA Championship? Rocco Mediate wins his first senior major, closed with a 66, 19 under par, happened to be a new record. The old record, believe it or not, set by Sam Snead back in 1973. And let me throw you a little curveball here on the Grill Room. What else took place in 1973 noteworthy in the world of golf?
I have no idea.
1973, Oakmont, Sunday, 63 by Johnny Miller, who's being honored this week at Jack's Tournament, 63. Nobody's ever shot 62 in a major. 63 at Oakmont. A lot of people argue, Alex, that was the final best round ever in any major championship.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty clear without the number, but it's also because you look at what other players did that day, And there were a couple 60s, but that was it. Everything else was 70 and above. So, you know, even though the course was a little damper from overnight rains, still shooting that number at Oakmont was crazy. And to just get back to a couple of things, Bob, one, Chris Wood, great finish at Wentworth. But, you know, if you watch that tournament and you watch the board at that tournament, maybe even didn't watch the tournament, just watch the leaderboard online, the amount of changes up and down with the different players that were either on top and then fell down. And Scott Hend is a great example. After going in, you know, leading after three rounds, just completely imploding. Danny Willett, who eventually finished third, but really never had a chance to win the golf tournament after a poor Saturday. You know, Martin Keimer showing some life. But, you know, Chris Wood, you're right. He not only does he solidify himself probably for the Ryder Cup, but now gets himself in a position that if one of the Englishmen decide to pull out of the Olympics, meaning Rory McIlroy or Danny Willett, and I'm going to tell you, at least one of those guys is on the fence right now, Chris Wood would probably be get a chance to get himself in there, depending on what Justin Rose does. So a lot of movement going on with the Olympic side of things. Chris Wood now gets himself, I think, in the top 25 in the world rankings. And I know we had some audio from him talking about, obviously, what it was a tremendous win in Europe.
Amazing. It's so hard to put into words at the moment. One thing that helped, we had just perfect numbers all day. So we sort of decided we could be quite aggressive at the flags. You know, it's a perfect 8-iron, it's a perfect 6-iron. You don't need to take anything off it. So that makes scoring a lot easier. But obviously you've got to roll the putts in as well. I've been hitting good putts the first 3 days without making many. But I suppose when you win, the putts drop for you. And I hold a couple of real key ones today.
You know, one of the other perks, Alex, that he gets, 5-year exemption into the Open Championship by virtue of that victory. Pretty impressive. One other note about that win by Rocco Mediate, reported that Donald Trump made a little phone call of encouragement while Rocco was on the driving range. Seems like Donald Trump's got the magic touch right now.
Yeah, on Friday, I guess, Trump called him. And I talked to Rocco and wrote a little story out of it on Thursday. Both Rocco, Gene Sowers, who was actually one shot out of the lead on Thursday, both of them have a Trump relationship along with David Frost and some other players out there. And, you know, the thing is not one of them have anything bad to say about Donald Trump. And actually, Rocco calls him DT. I'm not really thinking about it. I'm calling Donald Trump DT when I see him next time. But, you know, they all have a lot of good things to say about him and how supportive he's been for them in their careers. And in Rocco's case, he played tremendously well, you know, paired in the final group with Colin Montgomery and shoot 66. He said he had no idea he shot 66. And Montgomery shot 67, put a lot of pressure on him, but never enough. Rocco just ran away with it at the end.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Golfin, the innovative award-winning clubs of choice for parents eager to see their kids fall in love with golf. In fact, let's let Callum McPherson, founder and managing director of Golfin, explain how Golfin GFK clubs take the young golfer from beginner to winner.
So our clubs, our golf clubs, are designed and manufactured, as you know, Bob, to make the game easier for kids so that we build confidence and they have fun from the very, very beginning. So we then kind of thought, well, what else can we do to enhance the enjoyment factor, the fun factor for the kids? And we kind of thought, well, what about golf balls? So what we've developed is easy to hit golf balls. So we've
got a
60-millimeter golf ball. Basically, it's about twice the size of a normal golf ball. Other sports like soccer and rugby, the balls are scaled to the age of the kids. So we're just applying common sense to make it easier for the kids to hit the ball, and these things just pop right up in the air. They're light, they're safe, and they're easy to hit.
Visit golfin.com, that's golphin.com, to find out more and how to order your kids the gift of golf right now.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by golfweek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network, and of course, TalkSport 2, part of the world's largest Sports Radio Network. We'll be right back with a look at Jack's tournament, the Memorial.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
The Grill Room is thrilled to support the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and all superintendents doing great work for the game we all love. In fact, we call them the unsung heroes in golf. Here's what two-time major winner Jordan Spieth has to say.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
All right, Alex, before we get to the Memorial Tournament field, a few news and notes to talk about.
Yeah, Bob, but remember, June 7th is a Women's Golf Day, a new initiative geared to growing the game of golf among women. Very, very important, obviously, for golf as it is today.
All right, Alex, you were out in Eugene, Oregon. It is the Men's Collegiate Championship. Washington won last week, the ladies. I have to tip my cap to the coach of the Washington team. 33 years, first time she wins a national championship, a job well done. What about some of the guys playing in the NCAAs? Alex, a name we certainly know, Taylor Funk, son of Fred Funk.
Right. Well, you know, Taylor plays for Texas, playing much, much better. I talked to Fred about his game, who actually works with the same coach that that Jordan Spieth works with, Cameron McCormick. And, you know, Taylor put on about 25 to 30 pounds of just pure muscle. Big kid, looked like he's playing very well. When I saw him play in the final round on Monday, played well enough to help Texas to get into the round of eight in match play format. But his teammate, Bo Hostler, who is turning professional after this event, will be at FedEx St. Jude as a professional. It's got a ton of talent. There's no question about that. But Aaron Wise, the winner of the individual NCAAs, another kid with a ton of talent, played great at Oregon, but only 2 years, but is turning professional. And there's no question that as these kids come out, a lot of them, either just with 1 or 2 years of seasoning in college golf, they're ready to go.
All right, Alex, you brought up a good point about turning professional. You know, a lot of these guys were slated to play in the Palmer Cup, the tournament named after Arnold Palmer, but it seems like maybe they're not. They're going to pass on that and turn professional. Any inside scoop?
Well, you know, obviously there's a lot of names. I've already said Hostler is for sure. Aaron Wise is for sure. I think Robbie Shelton out of Alabama will be as well. Won't be going to the Palmer Cup, which is going to be at Formby Golf Club at the end of June, which is a great, great venue. Lee McCoy, another great player. We talked about him when he played so well at in Tampa at the Valspar. So there's a lot of good players. And you know what? It's very hard now, Bob, the way the system works, not to turn with a schedule and just go with it. So we'll see what happens with most of these guys. I think, let's put it this way, Bob. If you qualified for the U.S. Open and you knew that you were going to, if you went in there as a professional, you can have a chance to make money, it's pretty hard not to go ahead and play as a professional. So we'll see what happens with these guys after their qualifier this week.
Well, some of the professionals are going to have an opportunity to make not only a lot of money at the Memorial Tournament, but probably equally as special, as far as I'm concerned, is at the end on that 72nd hole, you get your hand shook by Jack Nicklaus. To me, that's as special a moment as there is in golf. No Tiger in the field. There was some speculation that he might try and play there, but he's not playing there. But a lot of other good names certainly in that field.
Well, we talked about it. I mean, you got Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth. You could stop probably there, and no one would complain about your field. Talked about the fact that all of them had won coming in. Then you get, You get Rory, you get Ricky Fowler, you get Bubba Watson, you get Phil Mickelson off of his notorious decision on insider trading. So that ends up meaning that you're going to have a pretty good field. Ernie Els making his 23rd consecutive start. I'll tell you, this is the best field and the best anticipated tournament that I think we've had, with the exception of the Masters.
And, of course, a couple of other special things going to be happening that week. Johnny Miller's going to be honored, and the Golf Journalism Award is going to be John Garrity, longtime Sports Illustrated writer and an author of more than a dozen books.
You know, Bob, the one thing I'm going to say is that when we look at this show next week and we look at what happened at Memorial, there's no question that the winner out of here is going to have played very, very well, and it's going to be a guy that you have to really look at going into the U.S. Open. I know David Lingworth won last year, but you know, you got such a great field with such great players, and the pedigree of the winner at Memorial has been of the highest quality. So if one of the top three has an opportunity to get it done and does win, it really is a huge leg up with all of them taking the next week off before going to the U.S. Open. So I think that would be your person, no matter who it is. It's going to be the guy that's going to be the favorite going into Oakmont.
Well, speaking of Oakmont, the U.S. Open fever is beginning to get ramped up. Sectional qualifying is in full swing. They're going to be playing at a couple of golf courses right near Memorial, and that's going to be a huge qualifying site because of the proximity to Memorial.
Yeah, Kinsale Golf and Fitness and Wedgewood Golf. What's interesting, Bob, it's not the traditional venues they have used in the past, which means that a lot of these guys are not going to have, they're not going to be familiar with these venues, which makes it a little more difficult because, you know, they like the familiarity of these places. So we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, sectional qualifying is such a big deal. 36 holes. It's a tough day. A lot of these guys, after coming off either Memorial or getting ready to go into the FedEx St. Jude, makes it very difficult. But look, it's the U.S. Open. It's the biggest event probably in the U.S., and I don't want to slight the Masters. So everybody is excited. Second major of the year with an Olympic year coming out. You have to expect that these guys are really pumped to go to Oakmont, which is one of the best venues in the United States.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Alex. Anybody that wins at Memorial probably going to have a leg up when they get to Oakmont, one of the biggest, toughest golf courses that we play in the U.S. Open Roeder. And I'm already excited about going up to Pittsburgh. They've made numerous changes on that golf course. I think it's going to be one of the great Open Championships. Last time we went there, Angel Cabrera came away with the crown. We'll have to wait and see if we have another surprise winner when we get back to Oakmont.
You know, Bob, I just want to ask you a quick question about this. We kind of skirted over it, but there was a lot of speculation about Tiger Woods returning at Memorial. And I bought into some of that. I think you did as well. Then all of a sudden you saw him rinse a sleeve at a media day at Congressional for his Quicken Loans event. Doesn't sign up for Memorial. Clearly, if he doesn't sign up for Memorial, would you agree that you're not going to see him at Oakmont?
I'm pretty well convinced at this juncture that he's not going to make his return at Oakmont. The golf course is too big, too tough under U.S. Open conditions, not the place that you want to launch a comeback. And maybe by passing up on the U.S. Open, the prudent play, and we'll have to keep an eye on it, we may not see Tiger at all in 2016. Maybe he can mount a challenge to return as best he can in 2017. Wow. 2017, that'll be 9 years after he won his last major championship, U.S. Open, when it was played.
Torrey Pines. Torrey Pines, one of his favorite venues.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
Wait a minute, Al. And who he nipped there, none other than Rocco Mediate, who has never won a major until this past week. So maybe some karma spreading around. We'll have to keep an eye on Tiger. We'll keep everybody informed right here on the Grill Room.
All right, when we return, we'll go into the feature interviews, one with Alyssa Gaudet about the worldwide happenings in women's golf, the Women's Golf Day on June 7th, and then Bob will have a chat with son of golf pro Chip Taylor, who is being inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, also on June 7th, Wild Thing and Angel in the Morning, two of his hit records. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Remember, you've been listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and of course, TalkSport 2, powered by GolfWeek.com.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
The Grill Room is thrilled to support the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and all superintendents doing great work for the game we all love. In fact, we call them the unsung heroes in golf. Now, here's what Sir Charles Barkley has to say.
If you love the game like I do, say thanks to a great golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Hot topic, we're talking about hot topic.
Well, I've known our next guest on the Grill Room quite a while, and I must say, when I heard what she's involved in, I was really impressed and kind of proud of her for what she's doing. Her name is Alyssa Gaudet, and there's going to be a Women's Golf Day coming up on June 7th. First, how did this idea come about, my friend?
Thank you, Bob, for having me on. It came about because I think that this is something that the industry has been grappling with for a while. It's like this puzzle that we're trying to figure out how to tap into the female market. And, you know, as you said, we have known each other for a while. I've been in the golf industry for 16 years. And I sit in these other sports conferences, and you see how the NFL and other leagues are really going after the women. And I realized they were seeing them as economic influencers. So that was the difference in my mind, is that I think as an industry, we're trying to, as much as we would love to have everybody be an avid 18-hole golf player, it was even more important for us to at least embrace women and see them, the important role they play as an economic influencer. First of all, by something like next year, 80% of all new hires will be millennials, and of those millennials, 50% are women. So women are not only generating their own income, but still a lot of them are largely responsible for decisions as to if the family, where their family would live or what they would do. So no one's going to buy a house on a golf course or join a country club or have their children participate in any sport, nonetheless golf, without their spouse's approval. So that's really where it came about, you know, first seeing that and then looking at ways that women could have an experience. So whether they play once a year, twice a year in their corporate outing, or become an avid league player, we wanted to create one thing where new women and existing women could come together, and that's kind of what this is, a four-hour experience, two of which are golf and two are socializing.
You know what amazed me when I looked at the numbers? An outstanding job has been done by a lot of people, 400 clubs in 20 countries. Is that correct?
It is correct, and it's only been 8 months, I mean, that from when we probably started this. So it is unbelievable, and the stories and the heartfelt messages and that we have received from people and women that have just taken the initiative, even if their club wasn't really going towards doing this or their federation. Women in Germany, India, Mission Hills in China is doing it, Valderrama in Spain. And, you know, I have to give a big hats off to Waterville in Ireland, because they were the first one outside the U.S. and Canada to sign up and do it. And as you know, especially, I think it drew some attention when you start seeing these really well-known courses, some of which are private, you know, going ahead and doing this. What we did is we set up a format and that any club could use. So it's a woman or a girl comes and they have the choice of either taking 2 hours of lessons or 9-hole play for 2 hours. And then it's going to be 2 hours of socializing, learning more about what options they have after that, you know, get golf ready or EWGA or league play lessons. But a club can either have it be a private event or a public event, and they can either charge or have it be free. So it is really not interrupting anything. It's a win-win for everybody. It truly is. PGA Tour Superstore and Golfsmith are doing it. All of the PGA Tour Superstores around the country, and it's free. It's free at all the Golfsmiths. So there's no barrier for entry as well for anybody who ever wanted to try or just go. And there's a lot of clubs that are also offering it for free.
Okay, so now you have to tell our listeners how a woman can get involved. And obviously they're going to want to experience this first ever worldwide Women's Golf Day. How can a woman get involved?
So you just go to the website, which is womensgolfday.com, no apostrophe, just womensgolfday.com. And when it says find an event or sign up, you'll go and it'll take you to a global map. And you just zoom on in on the area, wherever you live or whatever's closest to you, where you think you want to participate, and you're going to see the locations. I mean, even for curiosity sake, you can go there. You know, to the men, I would say, you know, get your wives, daughters, sisters, cousins, coworkers. Let them know about it, too.
And you have a great book that's available on the market called Two Good Rounds. It concerns some of the greatest golfers that ever played the game, talking about their 19th hole stories. If somebody wants to get a copy of the book, Elisa, how do they do that?
Yeah, there's three in the series, and you can get them on Amazon just under Two Good Rounds, and they should pop up.
Well, I want to congratulate you on the hard work that you've put in. I know in advance with you behind it, June 7th is going to be an exceptional day. Congratulations for everything you've done, and we wish you the best of success coming up on June 7th.
Thank you. And you know what else? Anybody who wants to check it out to see what's happening, we have a social media feed that's going to be feeding live. So starting from like Australia, New Zealand, and going all the way through as the time zones, as it goes through the time zones. If you go to the website and just curious to see what's going on, I welcome you under our social page. Just check out what everybody's doing on that day.
Well, we'll have to have you on after the 7th of June. Give us a first-hand report on how it went, but I'm sure that it's going to go very well.
Yes, thank you so much for spreading the word. We really appreciate it. It means a lot to us. You see, Hot Topic.
Our thanks to Alyssa. And now, Bob, let's hear about your chat with Chip Taylor.
Ah, hold your finish. Well, you look good, boy. Ain't you the pride of Illinois? 66, 63, doing fine. Followed it up with a 69. And say, oh, mama, look at me. I'm leading all them big boys by three. And my nerves is cool and my game is sound. Here come the final round.
Time now to play a different course on the Grill Room. Our next guest, son of a golf pro, brother to Oscar Award winner John Voight, and soon to be inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. His name is Chip Taylor. And Chip, thanks for joining us. And let me begin. How do you go from a golf pro son, in fact, you were a golf pro yourself, to becoming one of the nation's great songwriters?
Well, you know, since I was a little kid, Bob, one of the things that I treasured in the household was a Motorola radio that was between the boys' bedroom and the kitchen. And Dad and Mom knew I loved music, and they let me listen to that, and I could get stations from all over the country. And one night I heard Wheeling, West Virginia. They didn't have any country music in New York when I was growing up, and that's the first music that I really had a total passion for. And my early successes as a songwriter were all in the country field. And I just loved it. I turned pro as a golfer, but I was dying to get in the business. And I started selling my songs for $30 each. And then all of a sudden, some of them started to happen. And there I was in the business.
Speaking of songs that really happened, how about Wild Thing and Angel in the Morning? And now more recently, Chip, you're involved in some projects that involve, you know, they kind of marriage your songwriting and your golf background. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, one of the things for me, Bob, is when I'm on tour or off tour, one of my biggest relaxations is to watch the Golf Channel and to read about golf. Back to my local bar, I have my own little place where I sit, and there's a television right above me. As soon as I walk in, they put the Golf Channel on. So I'm out touring all the time and relaxing with golf, and I have an album about my early days with golf and my love of golf called, you've heard it, is Son of a Golf Pro. That'll be out probably around Christmas time. And then I have a couple of songs dedicated to those wonderful sisters in Canada, the Brittany and Brooke Henderson, who caddy for each other in different tournaments. And my family and I, we root for them and watch them when we can. And I have an album dedicated to the two of them, and also to all the spirit of the Olympics, and that's going to be out in about a month.
And of course, you have to be overly excited about golf returning to the Olympics.
Yes, was it 1904 or something?
Yeah,
like that,
1904, right? Yeah. And ironically enough, the fellow that won the gold medal, George Sands, competed in three different Olympic sports. Quite an achievement.
Is that right? Well, I didn't know that. That's something.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Songwriters Hall of Fame. I know you're honored about that, and I really appreciated when I first spoke to you about it by you saying that there are many, many other songwriters that you feel also deserve that honor, just being the modest Chip Taylor that I know.
Well, you know, some of my favorite songwriters are songwriters that are a little bit below the pop, or didn't have the monster hits or whatever, but they are just wonderful characters and wonderful singer-songwriters, like Townes Van Zandt or John Prine, or those are my favorite people. And this Hall of Fame, it's treating people who've written a lot of big hits, and Angel of the Morning happened to be one, and Wild Thing, and I Can't Let Go, and so. I have a lot of appreciation for all the people that helped me along the way, and I'll mention a few, some of those. And it's a funny thing how you turn left or you turn right, and something good happens to you, or whatever happens to you. But I could never be in this Hall of Fame without the guy that gave me my first guitar and taught me three chords, or the person that walked the streets in New York to get me my first record deal, and all these people are just wonderful folks, and deserve a lot of the credit for anything I get credit for.
Chip Taylor, our special guest. Before I let you go, Chip, favorite golf course you've ever played?
I guess the one I grew up on, Sunningdale Country Club, I would say that. Because my brothers and I used to be out there in the late, and when all the members were finally finished teeing off, we used to go out on that front nine up in the hills and play four or five holes back and forth, and it's all the spirit of love and the family attached to those hills for me. So that's a special place for me.
And that's where your dad, Elmer, was head pro for over 50 years. Thank you, Chip Taylor, for joining us on The Grill Room. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Bob.
That's a final round, boys. I had a dream last night I could hit that pill. I was out on tour with Bubba and Phil. I shot a 59, I was kissing that ball. Drove two par fours, and I recall I hit that ball around the old church steeple, and I wedged it in for a double eagle. I was up 5-5 and painting the town. Here come the final round.
Well, obviously, anytime you get in the Hall of Fame, it's a big deal. Congratulations to Chip Taylor on his Songwriters Hall of Fame induction. Remember, you've been listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and, of course, TalkSport 2, powered by GolfWeek.com.
Big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, golfers' best friends. Also to Golfin', innovative clubs for all ages, beginners to winners. That's their goal. And to GolfWeek.com. For Janet Self, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grow Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and like us on Facebook at The Grow Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.